The publication of the new novel Orders from Berlin coincides with the highly anticipated Hobbit movie based on the book by J.R.R. Tolkien, Simon Tolkien's grandfather. Simon Tolkien's psychological suspense novels have been called haunting, brilliantly conceived and beautifully executed, riveting, and compulsively readable. His last novel, The King of Diamonds, was named one of the best fiction mysteries of 2011. Now Simon Tolkien returns with Orders from Berlin, a thriller set against the backdrop of the London Blitz in 1940 that examines the political and cultural landscape of the time while engaging readers in a fast-paced whodunit chaser. It's always a great pleasure to welcome Simon Tolkien to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks so much for having me on. Thanks a lot.
It is always it's always a pleasure. What brought you to this time of the London Blitz in 1940?
I think I've been going backwards in time with the books I've been writing. So I started off with a book which was set in the present, Final Witness, 10 years ago. And then I had books that were set in the year of my birth, 1959, with backstories in the Second World War. For some reason, I'm really interested by the idea of people who are haunted by events that have occurred in the past, not even necessarily that events have occurred to them, but to their parents that they have to atone for. And so I had backstories set in the Second World War, and then I got interested through that in the Second World War, which has always been a kind of big part of my life, you know, growing up. The next door neighbor saved a friend at Dunkirk, and my father trained to be a fighter pilot in South Africa, and my uncle was a rear gunner in one of the bomber aircraft over Germany, and all this. So it was a big part of my life, and I wanted to go back into the Second World War and try and really see what it was like to live through it. I mean, it was, after all, the first real saturation bombing of a capital city, you know, that had ever occurred in history, and what it was like to live through the Blitz. And that's what really drew me to it, I think.
There is so much in here. What is fascinating about the book is how you blend the obvious real-life figures of Winston Churchill and Hitler with fictional characters to ultimately look at what could have happened had Britain not held out against the Nazis. Where did that idea come from, and what was it like to research those two pivotal figures to put them into this context?
The more I read about the history of that period, and in particular September 1940, when the book is set, the more I thought this was, as you say, Joe, a real pivotal point when history could have gone either way. I mean, it's difficult for us now to realize this in hindsight, but it really could have gone the other way. The odds were heavily against Britain holding out. Hitler had developed a military machine, the like of which the world had never seen. They'd rolled over France in 6 weeks when it had taken 4 years to make virtually no progress in the First World War. And Britain was being bombed day and night. What was really holding Britain together was the obduracy and determination of Churchill to hold out at all costs. In his own words, he said, we'll die choking on our own blood rather than give in to this monstrous tyranny. And the more also I read about Hitler, from Hitler's perspective, this was, in a certain sense, bitterly frustrating, because England was always somewhere that he'd actually thought was really quite a good place. From his racist point of view, it was a country of Aryans, and indeed an Aryan empire. So his focus was on the East, and he wanted to secure his flank in the West before going East. And the fact that Churchill was so determined to hold out, it struck me that this was a moment when history could have been changed if Churchill had been assassinated. And so I went for an assassination plot featuring a spy inside the British MI6 working for Germany. And as you say, I have Hitler and Churchill as actual characters in the book, which was really interesting, including also some of the main Nazi leaders. And it was a curious thing to actually research them as people. I guess it's a strange perspective, and perhaps also a little morally worrying in one sense, to be concentrating on Hitler from the point of view of just what it was like to be in a room with him, rather than, you know, what he did and our condemnation of it. It was, in a certain sense, necessary to suppress one's moral viewpoint in relation to him to do that. Churchill was also a very vivid character, received people in his bath, extremely eccentric, working in at very unusual times, drinking an unbelievable amount of alcohol, terrific sense of humor. I mean, I don't know, Joe, if you know that quote of what he said to Lady Astor when she said, if I was married to you, I'd put poison in your drink. And he said, well, if I was married to you, I'd drink it. This kind of thing. So he's a larger-than-life character, and it was very interesting. With Hitler, I was particularly using those YouTube videos, which have, you know, recently got the lip-sync technology, so you can actually hear what he's saying of him, which were largely shot by his mistress, Eva Braun, at the Berghof, where I locate some of my scenes. And that's very strange to see that place on YouTube very vividly, because the movies are quite well shot, and none of it is there anymore. I mean, completely destroyed by Allied bombing. So I used a variety of resources to try and bring these people to life.
In bringing this to life, it does bring to mind of how you feel an assassination plot against Churchill could have succeeded, and whether a German invasion of London could have been successful.
Well, I think Hitler himself, it wasn't just that he didn't want to be at war with England. I think also he had very serious doubts, looking back at history, both at Napoleon's efforts and at the Spanish Armada, about how easy it would be to land an army on the south coast, given the strength of the British Navy and given the weather conditions prevailing. So I think it would have been very difficult to land it. If they had been able to land it, the panzer divisions had been quite extraordinary in terms of what they'd achieved in France. But clearly, the whole thing came down, in a certain sense, to air supremacy. And I have that very much in my book, Hitler's enormous, frustration with Goering and the inability of the Luftwaffe to deliver. As we know, Churchill saying that we've never owed so much to so few, and those Battle of Britain pilots, those young men of, barely into their 20s, had saved England. That really is just really before my book is set, really in September 1940. That's during the summer, when the big mistake, in a certain sense, that the Nazis made was switching their attacks from the aerodromes over into London, and Churchill baited them into that mistake by launching his own bombing mission on Berlin. In terms of the possibility of an assassination, I thought, going back to what we were saying about Churchill, this willingness to take risks, his intense wish to stand up on the roof of 10 Downing Street watching the aerial dogfights overhead is just an example of his daredevil approach. I thought that an assassination would be possible, but I didn't think, given the how well MI5 worked at that time, that it would have been possible for somebody just to have been landed and get close to Churchill. I thought a more plausible possibility was somebody already embedded in MI6. Prior to Churchill, prime ministers and politicians had had an approach of really keeping the Secret Service at arm's distance and not seeing them face to face. But Churchill reversed that policy and really wanted to have a hands-on approach in terms of dealing with the intelligence. He thought that the ultra-intelligence, which came in, as a result of breaking the German Enigma code, was vital to the war effort. And I felt that if the Nazis had fed a mole inside MI6 with really good, albeit false, information about an invasion plan, that Hitler would have wanted to see the spy in person, and that would have given the opportunity for an assassination attempt, which is actually what happens in my book.
You make the point that it wasn't just the leaders and the events that attracted you to this moment in history, but that you wanted to recreate what it would have been like for ordinary people to live through this aerial bombing of a capital city in history. Asking that question, how did people cope? And it's a fascinating question.
Well, it's an extraordinary time. I was really helped by this amazing online archive that the BBC in England have collected between 2003 and 2006 called the People's War. And what it was is that they went all over England and interviewed people, I suppose, were in their 80s at that time, and got their accounts, which are now all online and easily accessible, of what it was actually like to live through the bombing and those events. And I got a lot of very vivid first-hand accounts. For instance, there's a major moment in my book when the bombing has just finished and a great a parachute appears to be coming out of the sky. And all the enraged people who've seen their homes destroyed rush towards the parachute. But then they see at the very last minute when it's too late that, in fact, it's not a German airman on the parachute. It's a landmine attached to the parachute, which is coming down. And the landmines are the most terrifying things of all. They could completely knock out and destroy an entire block of street. And so there's that deception, and that occurs in my book. And then there were also, you know, stories that I'd heard as a child. I have another situation where my policeman comes along and he sees just a hand sticking up out of the ground, and he can't reach the body because the body is blocked under masonry, and so he has to hold the hand as the person underneath is dying. These extraordinary poignant scenes, both from what I'd been told in person and from what I was able to read online, that I was trying to get the smell and the fear and what it was like down in the underground where so many people were practically living during those extraordinary days.
Simon Tolkien is the author of the novel Orders from Berlin. The book is published by Minotaur. As you mentioned, the people who tell you this story, you had many family connections to the war, and including the First World War, where your grandfather, J.R.R. Tolkien, fought, and ultimately, that experience had an impact on his writing.
The First World War, I think, I think people are mistaken when they say that The Lord of the Rings is, you know, a story about his life. But certainly, clearly, facets of his experience on the Somme in 1916 fed very directly into his writing. Both, I think, in terms of his hatred of machinery, you see that in the movies and in the book with Saruman and his terrible machinery and with the orcs going on in Isengard. Both also perhaps in the relationship between Frodo and Sam as they go into Mordor, the great bond between them, perhaps evoking that relationship between officers and their batmen on the Western Front. And then perhaps most vividly, when Frodo and Sam and Gollum are crossing the dead marshes and they look down and there are corpses inside the earth with holding candles. I mean, this is clearly reminiscent of what it was like in the mud on the Somme, terrible scenes back in 1916. So I think these all fade into his writing in a very direct way. And it's a war which, like the Second World War, is very vivid to me. And indeed, I have in my new book, Orders from Berlin, a backstory featuring another aspect of the Great War, which is the First World War, which are the people who were executed for cowardice on the Western Front. There were over 300 of them. And now that's led to a great deal of controversy in recent years because we've obviously known more about what shell shock was like and whether it was right to treat these people in this way. And indeed, the British government pardoned them in a general pardon in 2006. And in my book, one of the main characters has a brother who actually was executed for desertion, and this forms a very important part in the book. And I very much want to actually deal with the Great War more in my writing. And that, I think, would be the focus of my next book.
So, indeed, you are going backwards. Keep going back. When you look at that time in history and the impact that it had on your grandfather, and as you mentioned, The Lord of the Rings, this is, how do you look at that work as a writer? Do you get anything out of it as a family member and as a reader of the telling of a story? Because I assume somewhere in there, your brilliance in this book is somewhat genetic.
Well, thank you. That's really nice of you to say so, Joe. Yeah, I think that probably lines of creativity. You can see, like, you know, piano playing going through the families. Yeah, I mean, I guess the lines of creativity do run through, and so there is a genetic inheritance there. Which, but obviously, my books are very, very different from my grandfather's. I mean, they're set in very much in this earth, as they say, rather than Middle Earth.
Right.
I do think that The Lord of the Rings has been an influence on me. In the same way that books that have been extremely vivid to you or me, when you read them as when you're young, and they go directly into your imagination, and I think then really are fertile for the rest of your life. And when I was a kid, I was an only child, kind of living in this village, and not much TV or distraction. So I read an enormous amount, particularly 19th century books. And I think the atmosphere of those books, and also the atmosphere of The Lord of the Rings, does have an effect on me in relation to my writing. In a more direct sense, I mean, I remember us talking about my last book, The King of Diamonds, and I think there is a direct, obviously, relationship. What I was exploring there is the enslavement of men to jewels, and obviously that has a direct relationship through to The Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings is in enormous depth, and yet you can't bear not to know what happens next. And I guess those are two things that I aim for in a big way in my writing as well.
At what point in your life does the family introduce you to the work of your grandfather and say, this is part of your legacy?
I read The Lord of the Rings when I was really young. I'm not trying to bang my own drum. I just think I was a young reader. I read The Lord of the Rings when I was 7 or 8 first, and then obviously you take in less. And then I've read it quite a few times since. I've read it to my son when he was young, and then more recently, 3 or 4 years ago, to my daughter as well. I think it was interesting that my grandfather said that The Lord of the Rings reads aloud. It was a book really to be read aloud, and I feel very glad that I've done that twice and had that effect. I think like R.L. Stevenson, who also is a person who really benefits from being read aloud. I think there's a wonderful language in The Lord of the Rings which comes through. I read my daughter the Harry Potter books as well, so I had a full fest, if you like.
when a movie like The Hobbit is here and is out, and it's a blockbuster, what impact does that have on you? What impact does that have on the family?
I can really only talk for myself, Joe. The release of the Lord of the Rings movies 10 years ago, or probably more than 10 years ago, I can't quite remember, had an enormous effect on me, I think, because it kind of plunged me into a bit of an identity crisis about who I was. And I then wanted to carve out something for my own, and that really jettisoned me forward into becoming a fiction writer. I think we've spoken about this when we've spoken in the past, that
yes.
I'm kind of an unusual person because I didn't write fiction until I was 40. So that had an indirect effect on me, the Jackson movies, because they were such a huge phenomenon. But I think since then, I've written four books which have been published, which I'm pretty pleased with. And so I think I'm fairly comfortable in my own identity, and I'm a very different person to where I was 10 years ago. And so I don't feel this sense of a great flood coming over my head from the Jackson movies. So I await them, with a curiosity. I mean, I think they're going to be very different to the Lord of the Rings movies, because the problem with the Lord of the Rings movies, in a certain sense, is the fact that the Lord of the Rings is so huge that if you're going to try and be faithful to the books in making a movie, which Jackson by and large tried to be, then even a trilogy of films isn't enough to really cover everything that's there and the depth in it, which we've spoken about. With The Hobbit, you have a quite short story, which was written for his children with very different intentions and with very different length and structure. Back, 15 years earlier, and a trilogy of films, one film would probably be right for it. So he's obviously going to have to expand the story to deal with that. So it's a kind of reverse problem, and how he addresses that, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen it. I've only heard that some people were made feel rather ill by the special effects, but beyond that, I know no more, other than the trailers, Joe.
And what is your interest level in the sense? I mean, is it something completely, that it's happening and you're aware of it, but life goes on and it's off the radar other than, a passing interest?
Well, it's being part of the Tolkien family. you know, it's an important event, obviously, in relation to ourselves and the estate. I mean, just in obvious terms. But other than that, no, it comes. I should be interested to see it. But it's not a not kind of an earthquake. We don't have a premiere here in Los Angeles, so there's nothing for me to take my daughter, who would love to go to a premiere too. And so, you know, it comes. It's in the cinemas. It's fun. There we are.
Well, the new book is Orders from Berlin. It is a thriller and a quite fascinating one. It is published by Minotaur. Simon Tolkien, it's always a great pleasure to talk with you. I thank you very much for being with us and for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Joe.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Orders from Berlin. It's published by Minotaur. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.